I'll show you politics in America. Here it is, right here. I think the puppet on the right shares my beliefs. I think the puppet on the left is more to my liking. Hey, wait a minute. There's one guy holding up both puppets. Shut up. Go back to bed, America. Your government is in control.
Read my lips.
Just send your cash.
There has never been so many lies, so much deception.
Doesn't anyone notice this? I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
Please clap.
It's time for the Mike Madison Show, a new breed of conservative talk. Now, here's your host, Mike Madison.
Showtime! Woo!
All right, good morning. Welcome to the Mike Madison Show here at 103.9 WYAB. I am your host. 2 hours a day, 9 to 11 o'clock. As I say, I offer up a safe space to independent thinkers out there, beholden to no party, no politician. We call them like we see them here. Today's Friday. Next hour, we'll do it like we always do. We'll do False Flag Friday. We'll take a look. A lot of things happening up. You know, it's only been 2 or 3 weeks ago. It seemed like Ukraine was just off the table. Everybody got kind of bored with it. Well, I tell you what, it is heating up now. A lot is changing over there. Some pretty serious things, including the attack on the pipeline. Paul Craig Roberts had a very interesting take on what he believes might have been the motive to attack the Nord Stream 1 and 2 pipeline. We'll share that with you next hour. And then we will finish up the show like we always do, chronicling the world's descent into madness with This Week on the Crazy Train. A couple of quotes of the day today. I don't know who this quote is. I'm going to go back and attribute it, but it was in the meat of a story. This author wrote, forced constantly by the establishment to choose between them, patriotic Americans may one day come to choose, as did their fathers, the country they love, over the crown that rules them. Forced constantly by the establishment to choose between them, patriotic Americans may one day come to choose, as did their fathers, the country they love, over the crown that rules them. Feels like a founding fathers quote. I think it's probably what we're going to be faced here. I'm going to actually spend a bit of time on that today. Bit of a philosophical show again. I ran across this, and what it comes down to is my fatwa against the two-party system here in the United States. I ran across a Gallup poll. This was actually from last year, but I ran across it in a story today, and I think I now understand this new Cold War launched against libertarians, and particularly the Libertarian Party, that has recently been launched by Alex Jones, who said he is now anti-libertarian and the Libertarian Party is a cancer. Steven Crowder has done several segments on why he used to be a libertarian, but it's of no use to him now and should not be embraced by the country. And then I've heard a couple of little clips from Ben Shapiro, too, some of the biggest right-wing talking heads out there. And I think I understand it. My suspicion was there were maybe some funds directed towards them to start launching this attack, particularly in the case of Alex Jones. He's got a lot of bills to pay these days, and I actually feel sorry for him with those things. His free speech has been relentlessly under attack for 5 years, and I'm on the side of Alex Jones in all of those attacks on his free speech. But it was very interesting as somebody who has just suddenly done a U-turn in this coordination of this war against libertarianism all of a sudden seemed a little convenient to me. A Gallup poll last year found that 62% of U.S. adults say, quote, the parties do such a poor job representing the American people that a third party is needed. A record high 63% of Republicans favor a third party. Now, I'm not saying that the 63% of Republicans understand true freedom and liberty enough to make Libertarians party that third party. But I think Libertarian is the most danger, particularly after lockdowns and vaccine mandates and war foreign entanglements that are tiptoeing us towards, well, no, we're not tiptoeing anymore. We're sprinting towards World War III. The Libertarian Party checks off all those boxes for Republicans who have woken up to understand that the Republican Party doesn't love you. They're just another wing of the same crooked bird. And more people are waking up to that. 63% of Republicans favor a third party. I think the Republicans know that. And it certainly would behoove them to get people like Alex Jones, Steven Crowder, and Ben Shapiro on their side to herd the Republicans who are dissatisfied with the Republican Party, make sure they keep them in line. They did it with the Tea Party. They can probably do it again. 33% of Americans, when you want to know about who the people who are that are lost. And I got to say, this has got to be majority boomers. I'm sorry, that's probably insulting, but it's probably true. 33% of Americans believe the two major political parties are doing an adequate job representing the public. Who in the world are you 33%? As I say, that's got to be boomers who have, you know, they've really been, they've grown up and retired during a time when the United States was really kind of top of the heap. They don't see what's coming. They're sailing off into the sunset. They're not paying attention. They don't like the radical rhetoric of change. They just want to live out the rest of their days in peace. They've got to be the only people who are actually satisfied with these two political parties. So anyway, maybe this explains the Cold War on libertarianism now. It's an attempt by the Republican Party at mass manipulation to keep you on the plantation. Ben Bartley, he writes at the Daily Bell, he said, the reality of the system is that getting a little tongue-tied these days. The reality of the system is that disillusioned have nowhere to turn for relief and are conditioned to believe that they have no viable alternatives outside the duopoly, the lesser of two evils voting paradigm. We no longer live in a representative democracy to the extent that we ever actually did, and the above-cited polling confirms that average Americans are increasingly sick of both factions of the de facto one-party state. This is functional totalitarianism, North Korea, with more democratic window dressing like pluralistic diversity. And then I'll finish that with a quote from the great George Carlin, who pointed this out a long time ago, decades ago. He said, Americans are led to feel free through their exercise of meaningless choices. There are only two political parties. There's a reduction in the number of media companies. Banking has been reduced to only a handful of banks, oil companies. These are important, and you're given very little choice. Oh, but the flavor of jelly beans. The flavor of muffins. A bagel? You can get a piña colada bagel. We're given the illusion of choice by the meaninglessness of choices of trivial things. You know what your freedom of choice in America is? Paper or plastic, buddy? Pepsi or Coke? Window or aisle? Smoking or non-smoking? That's what George Carlin said. Of course, that was back in the day when there actually was a smoking section somewhere where Americans were actually free to run their business and offer inside accommodations to people who smoke. But the busybodies at every single level of government decided to quash that. And unfortunately, many people on the right allowed that as well. But this is just always remember that the reason that we are stuck in this two-party system and the reason that nobody, the disillusioned, feel that we've got no choices is because we have allowed this. We have demanded so little from our people. There's been zero accountability, and there has never been a legitimate threat, save maybe the Reform Party in 1992. There has not been a legitimate threat to the power of these two parties in some time. Well, we're going to be faced with the crisis. And when they face us with this crisis, we'll have some opportunities probably to defang a couple of these big parties. But right now, what their goal is to keep you all stirred up, make sure you sufficiently hate the other side so that you stay on the plantation where they've got you. We could make a change from this at any time we wanted to. When I come back, the infantilization of the American adult is now complete. I'll show you what I'm talking about when we come back. Stick around.
Went home with a waitress, the way I always do. How was I to know? She was with the Russians too.
One of the things that I think Democrats should be most insulted by is the infantilization of the Democratic voter by the Democratic elites. They really have got Democrats convinced that they can't get out of bed in the morning and tie their shoes or, you know, really even buy their own shoes. They can't get a phone. They can't get an ID to vote. I mean, essentially, the Democratic Party has tried to convince hundreds of millions of Americans that you're nothing without them, that you need them to give you give you any shot at any quality of life whatsoever, that you would basically just be a vegetable were it not for the Democratic Party. Over the past couple of years, we've realized that the entirety of government views us all as a bunch of helpless children, incapable of assessing risk for ourselves, of making any decisions for ourselves. No, they need emergency powers to take over control of our entire lives, our businesses, our church, our schools. They need total control because we are too stupid. We are too stupid to run our own lives. Well, I think the infantilization of the American adult is complete. You're never too old for a Happy Meal. Or at least that's what McDonald's is banking on. The fast food juggernaut this week announced plans to introduce adult-oriented meals, complete with a free toy, in an initiative designed to work off the nostalgia of the restaurant's famous red cardboard boxes. We are one step closer to idiocracy. You know, the only thing I will say, I make many references to idiocracy. Maybe there's something to be said that, according to the movie Idiocracy, this was supposed to happen in like the year 2500, I believe. We're about 500 years ahead of schedule for complete idiocracy. So anyway, when the government's not busy stroking your hair and telling you they're going to take care of everything, you can swing by Mickey D's and get a Happy Meal and diabetes. Anytime you want. Here's a shocker. With the House in session just two more days before lawmakers leave for the usual midterm panderings, a repeated promise by Democrat leaders to vote on a congressional stock trading ban this month appears not to be in the cards. Despite a scorching analysis from the New York Times, which revealed thousands of stock trades by 97 current lawmakers, which posed potential conflicts of interest. Gee, you think? As Punch Bowl News reports, House Democrats aren't likely to vote on the congressional stock trading ban, quote, anytime soon. I think they'll probably get to a stock trading ban about the same time they get term limits for you. The Republicans were the ones who dangled that term limits, that contract with America from the 1990s. Boy, they got around to a lot of it. They couldn't quite make their way to term limits. Isn't that interesting? When the outlet asked House Majority Leader Steny Hoyer about its passage, he replied, it was just introduced. I got to look at it and see what it is. Hoyer had previously stated in closed-door leadership meetings that he didn't like what was being proposed. So, Congress, they've only got 2 days left. It takes a lot of time and energy to shovel money in Ukraine and kick off. You can't just start World War III in a couple of days. I mean, they've been really working at this for 30 years, and they're just putting the finishing touches on World War III and the collapse of the U.S. economy. That takes a lot of energy. You can't be doing everything all at once. Don't count on the Republicans coming in if they win the midterms and putting in a stock trading ban either. This is one of these bipartisan things. If you look at these 97 legislators who have done quite well during times like pandemics, have gotten in front of things like the CHIPS Act by stock trades, don't count on the Republicans to come to your rescue on that one. But, of course, it is not just Congress. Not just Congress that has gotten rich. And I'll update you on how we're doing in just a second. But here's a happy story. Last night, our auditors at Open the Books, that's openthebooks.com, auditors at openthebooks.com received Dr. Anthony Fauci's fiscal year 2021 financial disclosures from the National Institutes of Health. Apparently, they had to sue several times to get these. The documents contain a wealth of previously unknown information. For example, the Fauci household net worth now exceeds $12.6 million, up $5 million from 2019 to 2021. Gee, I wonder, what kind of things could he possibly have invested in that racked him up a cool $5 million over the last 2 years? Of course, this is only through FY 2021. We are almost all the way done with FY 2022. I believe we're in the closing days of fiscal year 2022 as far as the government goes. So you can imagine that it is substantially better. I got to tell you, though, I was a little bit unimpressed with these numbers, and I believe that this is probably not completely accurate. Anthony Fauci is the highest paid federal employee in the country. And just to show you that failure has its rewards when it comes to government work, Fauci continued to be the most highly compensated federal employee, earning $456,000 in 2021 and $480,000 in 2022. Fauci out-earned the president, four-star generals, and roughly 4.3 million other federal bureaucrats. Anthony Fauci went from $456,000 in salary to $480,000 in salary because of his stellar success when it came to COVID. I keep asking where that red line is, where that red line is before you stop participating and funding a government that would pay the likes of Anthony Fauci $480. But I was a little depressed. I mean, not depressed, but I don't suspicious, disappointed. I'm a little disappointed in Anthony Fauci. As many patents as the guy has, as much manipulation as he has done to gear trillions of dollars over the course of his career towards Big Pharma, I can't believe the best he could do. This might really show his incompetence. Now, I refer to him as the mini Mengele. I believe what explains most of Anthony Fauci's actions is pure, unadulterated evil. But he may truly be incompetent, too. If you can be one of the highest paid government employees, he's making $500,000 a year. He's tied at the hip to a Big Pharma. If his net worth is truly only $12.6 million, it shows how incompetent he is. I would imagine maybe when he makes his exit at the end of this year, as he is one of the rats deserting the sinking ship when it comes to the COVID shots, there must be some big, fat, golden parachute waiting for him. I can't believe he has toiled in evil and inflicted so much suffering on people for so long, beholden to so many Big Pharma masters, that he's only pocketed $12.6 million. That's almost sad. As for us, we know that Congress is, they're doing their stock trades. They're getting rich. Anthony Fauci, $5 million over 2 years, while other people had their businesses shuttered, laid off of work, struggling with inflation. How are we doing? Almost everyone has felt the sting of rising prices. As of August, 60% of Americans were living paycheck to paycheck, according to a recent Lending Club report, a number that hasn't budged much since inflation hit 40 years high. A year ago, the number of adults who felt stretched too thin was a closer to 55%. Even high-income earners, I got to tell you, I'm on the cusp of these things. I've been telling you this reduction in the standard of living that started with the poor and went up to the working poor and has been consuming the middle class for a couple of decades now. I kept telling you, it's like floodwaters. It's just going to keep going up and up and up. Yeah, it's going up. Even high-income earners are feeling the strain, the report found. Of those earning more than six figures, 45% reported living paycheck to paycheck, a jump from the previous year's 38%. So you're making over $100,000. Of course, a lot of this stuff is that people do live beneath their beyond their means. We've been convinced if your income doesn't cover it, don't worry. There's loans out there you can get. We've become a debt-based society, and everybody's been tricked into taking on massive levels of debt. So even those who are doing quite well with themselves when it comes to their annual income have been convinced to spend even more than that income. Myself, I made a big turn 10 years ago, maybe longer than that. And I have really kind of viewed myself as a minimalist. I started just getting rid of stuff. And I have not been the worse for wear of it. I might even hazard a guess that I've been happier, but it's certainly, at the very least, it's made absolutely no change whatsoever. It's interesting. I may have talked about this before, but I had my kids start a pet sitting business. I was trying to teach them some level of entrepreneurial skills because I believe there's going to be a time in this country where you may really have to try to make your way. You're going to have to be kind of clever and creative and can't really count on a long-term job. The employment situation might be bleak for them. So I wanted them to understand that you can pretty much hang a shingle, and if you do something valuable for people, you can make a living. I've spent most of my life working for myself. And so this has kind of ingrained on me. I think it came down from my mom. My dad worked for Delta for 35 years. I can't even imagine. I cannot imagine doing that. But we did a pet sitting business. And so we visited a lot of houses, a lot of great people. And I just absolutely love animals. It was one of the reasons I enjoy doing it. This was back before they could even drive. So every pet sitting gig my kids got, I was the chauffeur to this. I didn't mind. I thought I was teaching my kids. I love my kids. I like spending time with them. It was kind of a fun activity to do, to go to people's homes and pick up their dogs and take them up for a walk or feed them or spend time with them in the living room playing around while owners were out of town. So there's all kinds of, and I just love dogs and cats so much. I just love animals so much. So it was great. The kids also, they were making about $40 an hour. $40 an hour was about what they were getting paid for pet sitting. Just an FYI out there. If we don't get to a situation where we have to actually eat our pets here in this country, that is an option out there for people. But what was kind of struck me, because these were a lot of people I didn't know, and there are people I know who were in similar situations, and I myself have been guilty of this too, but so many of the people, the clients that my kids went and did pet sitting with, they parked their cars outside of the garage. There was no room in the garage for a car anymore. And this was not just one house. Now, I'm not denigrating anybody. As I said, this was me at one point too, before I just decided, I got too much junk. There might have been times when I had a couple of moves too. You know, you really cuss yourself for accumulating so much stuff when you have to move. But it was amazing to me the number of people whose, even the interior of their house, every nook and cranny was full, every closet, you know, God knows houses, particularly out in the Madison Ridgeland area where we did our pet sitting, had been built with plenty of storage space. Storage space was full. Parts of the houses had stacked up boxes of stuff there, and then the garages were full of stuff as well. Now, we've just been convinced to have become these consumers, and because it's been debt-based, here's my fear. What happens when you buy things on debt? It doesn't matter if you're a government or a company or an individual. The use of debt to buy something rather than saving and investing to buy something with actual money is that you pull demand forward. You understand what I'm saying? Who could afford a car if they had to save money for it? You might not get that car for 3 years. You have to save money along the way and then get that car. Instead, we can get it now. We can pull that car in 3 years and go ahead and get it. The same with every single thing that you finance. It's things that you can't afford now that you could afford in the future, but you decide to pull them toward you. We have pulled so much demand forward that I believe there's going to be a big air gap behind that. If we run into a situation where people cannot, where the debt has kind of reached its limits, and there's some indications right now that at the government level, at the business level, at the consumer level, particularly with rising interest rates, we may be pretty much saturated with debt, people not willing to take on more debt. So there's this big gap of where we've pulled all this demand forward using all this debt, and behind it lies years and years and years of where people don't need to be buying stuff anymore. Now, this might be healthy for us emotionally, physically even, particularly if you got to move. But it's going to be a problem for an economy that is based on consumption, and that's essentially what we are. We are not just American citizens, but we are viewed as American consumers. We took a country that decades ago was one of the largest exporters. We had one of the largest trade surpluses. We were one of the biggest lending companies out there. We were loaning money to other people. We were the creditor nation. We flipped that on its head over the last 30 to 40 years. We are now the world's largest debtor nation. We don't save money. We accumulate debt. We don't produce things. We import them and consume them. But we'll see. I think this may be a topic in the future where they start seeing that, car sales slow down significantly. There's already signs of that. CarMax just had incredibly, I believe CarMax returns were half of what they expected. Stock tanked, took the markets down with it. Because we've pulled all this demand for used cars forward by this, particularly the stimmy checks and extending all this credit. So there's this big gap Once people have to realize they got to tighten their belts and realize, oh, I've already accumulated so much stuff. I'm good for several years. I'm not going to need to buy a new couch anymore because I don't want to borrow money for a whole new bedroom set or a living room set. And so there may be a lot of idle time for places that sell these kinds of products. So we will see. Just remember, as I do these stories about congressional stock trading, talk about Anthony Fauci's increasing wealth, just never forget who's responsible for this crumbling working class. And it's not one person. Don't let them scapegoat Joe Biden all alone. He's terrible. You're right. Had somebody yesterday sent me something about Joe Biden wrecking the economy. I just didn't even respond. Of course, Joe Biden is absolutely horrific for the U.S. economy. But what's going on right now is so much bigger than Biden. It's so much bigger than that man. That empty hull of what used to be a corrupt, evil man. But the American people, this next financial crisis, you need to face this with a determination to end things like the central bank and federal control of everything and the spending that comes with that. So just never forget, we use that term a lot, that we will be faced with that crisis. And it'll present an opportunity to expose these institutions and get rid of them. The only way for them to survive, the only way for the Federal Reserve to survive, the only way the two-party system survives is for people to view this next crisis, this upcoming crisis, through a merely political lens. And unfortunately, that's how we view everything now. So I implore people, don't fall for that trick. Don't let them off the hook. Don't look at it through a partisan lens. Understand your ruling class, your central bank, they have created this mess and whatever comes from it going forward from here. I'll be right back. Well, it would have been, could have been worse than you would ever know. On the dashboard and melted, but we still have the radio. All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. I am going to take a small hiatus for possibly a few weeks. I'll have some guest hosts in here. There may be some reruns. It's interesting. I do rerun some shows. I don't like to do that. I'm here pretty much every day I can be. And since I have this unblemished record of 17 straight days without a sick day, I guess the only thing I can verify for that is the last 5.5 years I've been at the station. You can ask anybody here. I've never heard me call in sick. But I don't really like to do it. But it's interesting, a lot of times when I rerun a show, I get more comments, more emails from people, more contact with people, and the second time the show goes through. I also have several shows that I listen to, some YouTube interviews, particularly financial stuff. When it gets complicated, I listen to them a couple of times, and I always get something new out of them. It's kind of like Seinfeld to me. I think I'm on my 9th viewing of just about every episode of Seinfeld, but I do some work with insurance and with what has taken place with Hurricane Ian, which is just really the images coming out of Florida. Really, really tragic stuff. But I do some work with insurance, and the term that they use is we've been deployed. I used that term yesterday with a veteran, and I don't know if it might have hit him the wrong way. I don't know if that's belittling to the military who deploys on life and death stuff, but this is, this is people's livelihoods, but we do use the term deployed, and I think he sarcastically said, yes, thank you for your service. Anyway, I've been called to action. I'll put it that way. The insurance industry, obviously, in the wake of a storm as devastating as Ian, it's an all-hands-on-deck situation, so I'll take a little bit of a break. It's going to be very interesting. One of the great things about this show is for me personally. And I believe that my time behind this microphone and going through this news and talking to you and interacting with people by email, and it's almost talk therapy to me. I'm almost worried that the one thing I know is that with this storm and all the devastation, there's going to be a tremendous amount of work involved. So I'm going to be very focused in on that. But a lot of times I'm a news junkie. I'm a foreign policy junkie. I'm an economy junkie. I mean, I read a lot of stuff, I will tell you, and I'll probably be forced to take a little bit of a break from that. I don't know if it's news gets inside my head and rattles around and I don't have an outlet to talk about it, I'm a little afraid for my mental health. But maybe I'll actually just get a break, a well-deserved break from this. It's not going anywhere. And I always, there are times I hate to miss a single show for any particular reason, because sometimes news moves so fast, and we are living through times right now that it's really going to be, you know, our kids will tell their grandkids about some of the things that are going on right now. I hope none of it is as severe as it has the potential to be. We're going to talk next hour about what's going on with Russia, because this thing is just getting worse and worse and worse, and there is not even an indication. We're not even seeing the first flicker of a brake light. It is full speed ahead right now, and contrary to popular opinion within the mainstream media, there are not adults in charge of this situation, so it's incredibly dangerous. It might be good for my mental health just to take a break from paying attention to this, because I got to tell you, they've got me kind of scared right now. When it comes to the economy stuff, I'm nimble. Like I said, I'm a minimalist. I don't need much stuff. I've got my big cooler full of grass-fed beef from Stonington Farm. I spent time this morning. I'm leaving as soon as I leave the station today. I had to wake up early this morning, make sure my cooler was properly packed with ice packs and everything with my Stonington Farm steaks. They're traveling with me. I will not be without them. So the economy stuff doesn't really frighten me as much. I'm concerned for my kids, but I know it's something we must go through, and the sooner the better. We should have done this in 2008, 2009. We should never have allowed them to bail out the big banking institutions, the insurance companies, all those that took needless risk. We should have paid the price for an over-debted economy at that point. We should have made all of the banks, all of the financial institutions that took outsized risk, on which they made tremendous profit, they should have realized those losses, and those losses should have included the loss of control of some of their firms, complete bankruptcy, and it would have been brutal. We probably wouldn't have been really getting out of it to maybe 2015 instead of about the two-year recovery that started around 2010 when the S&P bottomed out at, anyone? The S&P stock market bottomed out at 666. That feels a bit like an omen to me, I got to tell you. But we should have let it happen then. It needs to happen now. I'm ready to see the correction that is due. This bubble needs to pop to give our kids a chance at a decent future. So I'm not scared about that. But what's going on with Russia right now could really, really hurt a lot of people. The financial crisis hurts. It's adjusting your expectations. And many of us have lived through some pretty severe downturns, whether they were national economic events or just personal economic events where we've lost jobs. Now, those things have happened. But when it comes to just what seems to be spiraling out of control, when we have now decided not just to pester little Saddam Hussein or Bashar al-Assad in Syria, people that really can't, they're pretty much helpless. It's almost like a cat with a small mouse when the U.S. foreign policy sets its sights on one of these small little countries that we know we can just toy with at our will. We have now decided to drive Russia and China together and then mess with them. And I'm not talking about just words. Obviously, we are actually attacking them. This makes me incredibly nervous. I don't know we're going to see mushroom clouds in the United States, but it certainly is going to hurt a lot of people, and we may see some problems here within our own country. So I'll have a bit of a mental break from that as well. So coming up, you'll hear a couple other voices just for the next couple of weeks while I take care of this business. A couple other stories before we change tact and get into this Russia situation next hour. So stick around. I'll be right back.
Yeah. It's been a ride. I guess I had to go to that place to get to this one. Now, some of you might still be in that place. If you're trying to get out, just follow me.
Some of the headlines that really tick me off are probably very different than other people. Many times I've used segments on the show, I've said, you know, inside the mind of Mike Madison, how I interpret things. That's very differently from, you know, what most people see when they see news stories. Here's one. It just makes my blood boil. This is on Market Watch today. Hurricane Ian victims now have until early 2023 for tax deadlines, including extensions on this year's income tax returns, the IRS says. Oh, they're still going to take your money. They're going to give you a little bit more time. I would imagine John Gotti, at some point during his reign of the New York City underworld, I'm sure there were times where some of the people he was shaking down maybe had a death in the family, and he said, all right, look, your mama died. I'm going to let you go take care of her funeral. We'll leave you alone for about a while, but we'll be back. We'll be back. That's your loving IRS. They've decided the people whose lives have been just now flipped completely upside down, it will take them years and years and years to recover. The IRS says we're going to give you a couple of months. Why we put up with this? It's the constant nagging question in the back of my mind. As I mentioned several times over the last few weeks, the founding fathers, the founding fathers risked everything. Most of them were wealthy people, really doing quite well, even under the crown. I mean, they came over here, they made their way, things are going well, well-recognized people, men about town, financially successful. They risked everything because the British Crown had levied, the taxes had gotten up to 1.5%. And that was just a red line in the sand. And I'm sure it wasn't the 1.5%, but here's the difference between our founding fathers and the people of today. The founding fathers knew that once you let the camel's nose under the tent, it wrecks the place. And they knew that, I'm sure that had come up from maybe a half of 1% up to 1%, and it was at 1.5%, and they said, okay, if we don't nip this thing in the bud right now, we're going to have some problems down the road. Today, in contrast, the people that consider themselves the most patriotic in our country are happy to pay 23% under a Republican as long as they don't have to pay 26% under a Democrat. That's the difference between today and the founding of our country. The founding of our country, which I pointed out the other day, was the one time we tried libertarianism, and it seems like it went pretty well. Pretty well. But anyway, so there's your loving government. Shake you down next year. Just when you're getting your feet up back up under you, you finally got that carpet back in your house down there in St. Pete's in Florida. You sit down on the couch. Finally, 6 months of hard work and labor, getting ourselves rebuilt, and then here comes the IRS. All right, time's up. Here we come. There's a headline out, FDA announces new definition of what's healthy. To be honest with you, I haven't even clicked on this thing yet. It's here in my show notes. I'm looking at my time constraints and trying to figure out, well, what else can I cram into this hour before we really get down to the meat of the show next hour and what's going on with Russia. Food and Drug Administration, your FDA, another one of these loving three-letter agencies. They just care about you so much. I mean, the IRS giving you a couple of months before they shake you down if your house was completely destroyed by a natural disaster. And here comes the FDA. They love you just as much. They've announced new rules Wednesday for nutrition labels that can go on the front of food packages to indicate that they are, quote-unquote, healthy. Now, I've already done in my health show the new food compass that they've come up with. They are now doing to food what they've done to education. I mean, they've been doing it for a while. I've been talking about it relentlessly every single Wednesday for the past 5.5 years. But they're now, you know, you had Common Core, you had No Child Left Behind. They just keep rolling out. Each iteration of new education reforms are worse than the ones before. The FDA has decided that that model is working so well to destroy the American people that they've decided to incorporate it as well. And now they've gone from the food pyramid, which is actually upside down. If you look at the food pyramid, it is upside down. If you want to reclaim your health, turn the food pyramid upside down and eat according to that. not the way they tell you. Well, now they've got the food compass where they tell you that Lucky Charms are better for you to eat than eggs. That's the FDA that loves you. This story does not elaborate, but I can't wait to see the new food labels where they tell us what is actually healthy. I guess Lucky Charms will be labeled some kind of a vitamin right now, and there'll be a skull and crossbones or a black box warning on a box of fresh eggs. I know there's a lot of people out there that say that they are trying to kill us. And I say there's a big balance in there. I don't know where it is. There's pure evil. There's absolute incompetence. There's corruption and greed. And I'm not sure how that pie chart lays out. But the result is these people are going to kill you. They've already, medical establishment and the FDA has inflicted so much mass misery on the American people for the last 50 years. Their record is unblemished in that area. I'll be right back.
Yeah. What is it good for?
Absolutely.
Nothing.
Uh-huh.
All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. Thanks for joining me. It's Friday, so we do every Friday at 10 o'clock. We focus in on what's going on around the world, and it's not good news these days. We need to get some kind of steam let out of this kettle right now between the West and Russia. This is a proxy war between the West and Russia, and most particularly the United States. And I'll tell you why. This might have changed pretty dramatically within the next month or so to a positive. A lot of the steam might have been let out of the kettle, except for the fact that the Nord Stream pipelines were attacked. And so we'll talk about that in just a little bit. I found this very interesting. This was written by someone. The name was something like Babushka. I'm not pronouncing it right, but I found this story on a website called The Saker. And it's a pro-Russian website. There's no doubt about it. It's an interesting site. I think it's thesaker.com if you ever want to just kind of put it on your rotation. If you want to know what the other side is saying about troop movements and victories and losses in Russia, it seems to be much better than anything I'm seeing in our mainstream news here, because they do point out when Russia has a loss, they talk about it. But they put a lot of context to what our media says is Putin's a madman. He had no reason to do this. And now he's on the run and he's being embarrassed and everybody in his country hates him now. That's the mainstream media on this. The Saker has got a lot of writers that are either in Ukraine or they're Russians. And they seem to be one of the more objective groups out there on it. I can't vouch for everything on that website, but I do see when I want to see what they call a sit rep, a situation report. I go to the Saker just to see what they have to say, and there may be some misleading things in there. There's always, you know, the first casualty of war is the truth, as they say. But what we're being fed by our mainstream media is absolutely horrific, one-sided and incredibly inaccurate on purpose. But this writer, Babushka, something similar to that, wrote this. And I thought this was really actually kind of interesting. Russian roulette is a most peculiar expression, at least for any Russian, for the simple reason that he has never heard of it. In fact, it does not exist in Russian, neither the expression nor the reality. It is something we learn about with astonishment when we learn English. The expression is an American invention, and only an American with a death wish could have thought up such a thing in 1937, in fact. And so it is that only an American with a death wish would have thought up the present situation. He has poked the bear so much and so often for over 30 years that the bear has had a lot of time to plan exactly what he would do. Now he is doing it. Why are you surprised? You loaded the gun and pointed it at your own head. Now expect the bullet to come out. First of all, I think that's fascinating that Russian roulette is not a Russian thing. It was made up in America in 1937. Not sure why they attributed it to the Russians, but anyway. But Russian roulette is exactly what the Biden administration, and let me not make this in any way, shape, or form partisanship. This has been going on for 30 years. Republican and Democrat presidents, Republican and Democrat congresses, Republican and Democrat-run state departments, CIA, Pentagons, NATOs, all of these people have been involved in this lust for war, this lust for the isolation and destruction of Russia. And it's so sad that after the fall of the Soviet Union, this country, while certainly not perfect and rife with corruption and everything, but they tried to tend more. Somebody brought it up the other day. I was listening to somebody and they said, you know, essentially, Vladimir Putin's like a Republican. He's like a conservative running Russia. Now, he's a strong man, and he's corrupt. He's rumored to be worth billions of dollars. You don't get that from just public service in Russia. So he's a corrupt, strong man. There's no doubt about that. But they say he's basically trying to, you know, they do some capitalist stuff there now. They're trying to heal from decades and decades. What was it, 80 years of Soviet control, communist control there? This country could have been one of the best allies America ever had. We could have taught them. We could have helped them become a free. Can you just imagine what great trading partners with all of those resources Russia is, and with that giant landmass and all those people, what great consumers they could be for American products or Americans for them? This, none of this had to happen. But because the American people on the right and the left are happy putting psychopaths in charge of our foreign policy, it feels to me, as this article said, we loaded the gun and pointed it at our own head. Now we better expect the bullet to come out. Putin is now the referendums are over. I'll play a quick audio clip of how the news was reporting to this. This is how just about every single mainstream news outlet reported on the referendum votes in the places seeking independence in Ukraine.
In the meantime, we turn now to the other news this Friday night into the alarming images coming in from Ukraine this evening. Russia holding so-called referendums now in part.
So-called. They're so-called referendums.
Of eastern Ukraine, all part of Vladimir Putin's efforts to annex parts of Ukraine. In fact, there are now pro-Russian soldiers with assault rifles going door-to-door collecting ballots. In fact, security cameras capturing images of these soldiers escorting election officials, collecting those ballots from Ukrainians. The U.S. has been calling these elections a sham.
It's so interesting to me. So interesting to me that we are so pro-democracy, unless a vote doesn't go the way we want. And then it's a sham. You ever notice this? It's a sham if they do something we don't like. But it's voting and expressing the will of the people whenever they vote the way we want. That is American hypocrisy of foreign policy. The so-called referendums. Anyway, the referendums are over. Russia won. These are people who have been under attack by the Nazis in the Ukrainian government now for 8 years. 8 years they have suffered shellings, murders, encroachments on their land, the banning of the Russian language, cutting Crimea off from natural resources like, I don't know, water. I bet Crimea still had better running water than Jackson, Mississippi, but they attempted, the Ukrainian government tried to cut off 85% of their water supply to Crimea when they voted to go with Russia. These are human rights abuses. These are war crimes. But because they're vassals of the United States, of course, there's no prosecution for that. Nobody said anything. Did you ever hear anybody call Zelensky a war criminal? Never accused Zelensky of attempted genocide, like they say about Vladimir Putin, even though he cut off the water to cities in eastern Russia. Anyway, the referendums have succeeded now. These areas are now, in terms of Russia, they are now Russian territory. And that means any attempt by the Ukrainians to try to retake any of these areas that just voted to go with Russia will be met with the same kind of force that if Mexico tried to invade, well, maybe that's a bad example. They've been invading for a while, haven't they? Let's just say if Canada started coming into California, well, that's a bad example, too. California's already communist. If the Chinese came through California and then started going into Arizona, you can imagine the American military response. That's what Russia's going to undergo now. This is now part of Russian territory. Now, the pipeline thing, nobody's really said exactly, who has done this thing, but we certainly have the usual suspects. The media will point out to who they think did it.
Tonight, European leaders are accusing Russia of sabotaging two underwater gas pipelines in the Baltic Sea. Ukraine is calling it a terrorist attack. Authorities are investigating the leaks in the Nord Stream 1 and 2 pipelines, a vital source of natural gas for Europe. There was a sudden drop in pressure on Monday. Video shows bubbles where the leaks occurred after underwater explosions were detected.
Yeah, of course, Europe is saying Russia did it. What a shocker. This was a clip I found from the, there's this Darren BDA, he's from Revolver News, an alternative news source. We'll see what they have to say about it.
The soft power is out. We're down to kinetic here, kinetic economic warfare. And both Nord Stream pipelines have sustained severe physical damage, which, according to reports, will make them inoperable for the foreseeable future. All governments that have commented on this have said that this is an act of sabotage. And so the question is, who benefits from this? Now, of course, U.S. and NATO-aligned organs are saying that somehow the Russians did this without any explanation about why that would be so.
I saw a great meme where they said that they found a Russian passport where the pipelines had been blown up. If you understand anything about 9/11 and the ridiculous official story and have challenged it at all, you probably are familiar with the passports, you know, the Twin Towers. The planes were incinerated into the buildings. The buildings were incinerated into nothing but dust and tiny little shards of rubble. Yet somehow they found one of the terrorists' pristine passport sitting on the sidewalk, and that's how they knew Al-Qaeda did it. So somebody was poking fun at that, saying they found a passport. I had said, to my credit, I say I'm crediting the passport joke to somebody else, but when it first happened, I told one of my friends, I said, I bet NIST, the National Institutes of Standard and Technology here in the United States, they've done an investigation, and they have determined that the Russian pipelines collapsed due to small office fires.
But as you point out, one political official from Poland who happens to be married to Anne Applebaum, who is a really a kind of royalty belonging to this Atlanticist establishment. Incidentally, she was part of the Integrity Initiative, this secret influence operation group designed to condemn Russia and sabotage the pipeline. He was sort of mask off, had a mask off moment on Twitter when he actually thanked the United States and showed a picture of this big disturbance in the water where the pipeline was, and, you know, suggesting, okay, this is the work of the United States.
And isn't that interesting that the United States government, that is trying to shove us all, you know, they're closing pipelines here, they're trying to shove us all into the Green New Deal, telling us that we can't run our air conditioners and, you know, all this climate stuff. I don't know. I'm no rocket engineer. I'm no pipeline engineer. But I got to imagine that exploding a couple of pipelines underneath the ocean, probably not good for the environment, I would just say. I don't know that anyone's really pointing that out. It's just one of the first things I thought. Well, this could certainly be an ecological disaster, but that doesn't matter to the people in charge because they don't really care about the climate or the planet anyway. They just want to make the cash off the Green New Deal. Paul Craig Roberts has a very interesting theory about why these pipelines were attacked by the United States or the West. We might have hired some mercenaries. Some Ukrainians apparently have the ability to have done this stuff, but they wouldn't do it without our say-so. It's like Israel. They don't do anything unless they let us know, hey, we're about to start some crap. You're going to be behind us? And the United States says, absolutely, we're itching for war. We're ready to get involved with anything. We're tired of just sending you money. We need to send you some of our kids, too. Paul Craig Roberts made a point that I think is pretty interesting to ponder, and that is the fact that had these pipelines still been functional, right now they're just turned off. Putin turned them off and said, until you lift some of these ridiculous sanctions on us, we're not sending you any oil, any natural gas, which seems to be a very logical response. You know, if you're, you don't really want to do anybody any favors when they're attacking you. This is human nature. I know it's kind of like it's like Iran. Trump rips up the Iran nuclear deal, and then we scream at them when they violate the deal that we ripped up in the first place. Somehow we're still holding their, we want them to hold up their end of the agreement, but we ripped up our end. That's the United States. That's how they negotiate. Trump was horrific in doing that, but he was convinced to do it by his largest donor and the Republicans' largest donor, Sheldon Adelson, who was just the Republican George Soros. He's resting in hell now, so we don't talk about him much. But Paul Craig Roberts made the point that, you know, these pipelines are just shut off and Europe's about to go through a cold winter. And all signs are pointing to where it could be a pretty miserable time. There may be Europeans who literally freeze to death this winter because energy costs have gone so high. And there are shortages as well. They're out chopping down the forest like they did in World War II just to try to find some heat. And Russia had this pipeline where they could flick a switch or crank a gear or whatever it would take to turn gas back on to Europe, and they could save the day. When it gets really cold, I bet you Europeans would drop some of this. Maybe they'd see through their media and their disgusting political class in the EU and say, Russia is the one that holds the key to our comfort right now. Let's back off Russia and let them sell us some gas. And so Russia had the ability to come in and be the white knight savior to the European Union, to European countries this winter. And I don't think the U.S. could stand that. Bad PR. Bad PR to let Russia do something for other countries to save their lives. We would rather see Europeans dropping dead of hypothermia in the streets than allow Russia a victory and an ability to actually sell their own natural resources. I cannot begin to tell you the depths of depravity of the people that are in charge of what's going on right now. And this is why I'm so worried. Because the people that are in control right now are not good people. They are evil, evil people. They are willing to see people die. As a matter of fact, we are willing to fight till the very last Ukrainian at the least. What's happening in Ukraine is very similar to what happened in Syria. We unleashed radical jihadists on Syria. Just told them to go buck wild. Destroy anything they want to destroy. Kill anybody they want to kill. Syria hadn't done anything to us, but our people sat back and were absolutely had no problem whatsoever with watching men, women, and children be murdered and have their lives destroyed in Syria. Put all their belongings over their shoulder and have to walk to Europe. Flood of immigration into Europe with these wars in the Middle East. These people do not care one whit for human life. They do not care. You're pawns and meat puppets. If you serve them in the military, you're of no consequence to them. You're a tool. The same way that I might treat a hammer that I leave out in the rain. My dad used to get so mad at me when I'd leave his tools out. That's the regard that the people in charge of U.S. foreign policy have for men and women in uniform. Not to mention anybody who's not an American that's halfway around the world. They care nothing about them. They are willing to see them suffer as long as their goals of power and profit are achieved. And this great Christian nation full of great Christian people in this country, turning their back on that, pretending it's not happening, I think your days of pretending that we haven't been doing this are about to be over. I think we're going to see some real consequences here. So all indication is that the U.S. is the one who was behind this pipeline attack. I can't imagine. There's talk already about the fact, well, maybe Russia will swing by and start cutting some of these internet cables that connect us to the rest of the world, these massive cables that sprawl the ocean floor. Well, I bet we'll have a problem with that, right? That'll be an act of war, I'm sure. That'll be a needless, provocative act of aggression out of Russia. When we do it, it's just, part of business, as the demented Joe Biden said, oh, we'll stop that Nord Stream 2. Well, apparently they have. It would take years to restore this now. And understand, that means that even if they have a peace deal tomorrow, and they have no intention of doing that, I think Russia's going to have to just win this thing outright for it to be over. And that's really scary. They're not going to stop. But even if they did get a peace deal tomorrow, that means Europe still freezes for a few more winters. And these people who are in charge do not care. The people in charge of NATO don't care. The people in charge of the EU, they don't care. They will be warm. The citizens are the ones that will be cold. Joe Biden does not care. The people in foreign policy, in Republican and Democrat establishments, Roger Wicker doesn't care how cold a European gets this winter, as long as he gets to poke and prod and try to isolate and destroy Russia for his own demented reasons. He doesn't care how many children shiver their way through a night in Europe for the upcoming winter. He doesn't care. He probably doesn't even think about that. and cross his mind. All that kind of suffering, it's not him. He's fine. He's got a home in Mississippi. He's got a home in Washington, D.C. He flies private jets. His big black SUVs are just gassed up and ready to go. He doesn't give a whit. And he won't give a whit for any of you that may be forced to go fight this war. I just cannot tell you how disgusting these people are. And for people to give them a pass when your guy is running the system, oh, they're good then. It's never good. U.S. foreign policy for the past 70 years has been responsible for more misery around the world than ISIS, Al-Qaeda. Doesn't matter. U.S. foreign policy has been the wrecking ball on this planet for quite a while. All right, short segment here. I went long last segment. I get very upset about this stuff. You know how you might see stories or hear of a parent who is just violently abusing a child, and you just get sick. You're just enraged at this grown-up that's taking advantage of a small, innocent child. That's how I see every single one of these politicians and bureaucrats and think tankers that have been provoking this war. They know the misery that it's going to cause. They don't care. They do not care how many innocent people are hurt by these things. They are provoking it. They're causing it to happen. And I do not give them a pass there. I see that the same way I would see some parent who targeted a poor innocent child in any way. These people are equally depraved. Here's a fun one. Thank you to John for sending me this. This was posted on Gab. On the dark web, javelins, U.S.-made javelins, continue to sell for $30,000 apiece. They promise delivery throughout Europe in a barrel of oil after making a deposit or wire transfer into a bank account. That's right. You're being stripped of your wealth so that Roger Wicker and Joe Biden can send endless streams of money. And there's a whole host of Republicans, too, that are on that list. Including Mike Pompeo and the Trump administration, who were shoveling all kinds of deadly weapons to Ukraine for the past 4 years. You're being stripped of your wealth to provide these weapons to Ukraine. The Ukrainian generals, they've known Ukraine to be one of the most corrupt countries on planet Earth. They're taking those weapons and they're cashing them in. $30,000 apiece on the dark web for a javelin. Joe Biden tells us if we want to oppose our government, we're going to need an F-35. Well, on the dark web, I would imagine there's some of those available as well. One interesting story, I don't know how to feel about this one. Did you see the story? Our first openly transgender army officer, got caught passing classified information to Russia. Now, when I saw this, it's kind of like, well, you know, I mean, I hope Russia wins this thing. It's the only way it's going to end, because if it's not, our people, the West is not going to stop until Vladimir Putin is overthrown. And you want to put a caged Vladimir Putin into a corner? That's not a place any of us want to be. So I'm hoping Russia just finishes this thing quickly. If they won't do peace, then Russia just needs to settle this themselves and take these areas and convince people that stop messing with them. So when this openly transgender guy is passing on information to Russia, I don't know. I kind of feel like maybe that was the right thing to do, but also kind of caught me when I realized this was the first openly transgender army guy. I just thought, this is just a guy who apparently is just addicted to switching sides. There was also a story, I guess I'll play this real quick, just kind of interesting, a short clip. There's spies everywhere these days, and they've got creative ways to pass on national secrets.
A couple living in suburban Maryland has entered a new guilty plea in connection with a plot to sell military nuclear secrets. Jonathan Toby, a former nuclear engineer, could serve at least 27 years in prison. Diana Toby could face more than a dozen years. The couple allegedly tried to sell information about submarine technology to Brazil, hiding data in a peanut butter sandwich.
Gotta outlaw those PB&Js. I'll be right back.
What's the frequency, can it be sharp and so drained? Uh-huh.
right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. Thanks for joining me. We will finish out this week like we always do, chronicling the world's descent into madness. It's accelerating, so we've got to take a look at it. Poor Mississippi. That's all I got to say. We are just coming off of several weeks where Mississippi, in particular Jackson, our capital city, made the news. Well, you know, Mississippi does not get talked a lot about on the mainstream news. We're not one of the places with the movers and the shakers and all the good activity, but occasionally, first it was the water crisis, and now I hear this on CBS News.
A man who once ran Mississippi's welfare agency pleaded guilty today to federal charges in the largest public corruption case in the state's history. John Davis admitted to misspending millions of dollars that were supposed to help needy families. Others linked to the scandal include retired NFL quarterback Brett Favre and former Mississippi Governor Phil Bryant.
That John Davis guy should have just gone to court and just identified as needy. That might have gotten him off the hook in today's climate. Speaking of climate, CNN, in the wake of this horrific storm, Hurricane Ian, that just leveled parts of Florida, really is a devastating storm. Apparently now it's regained some strength and is targeting South Carolina. So this thing's making its way up there. But CNN just can't help itself. I barely need to even play these clips, but it was just funny. CNN needs to vet their guests better. They need more climate hysterics on there. Listen to them continue to attempt to try to tie this to climate change, and then we'll take a look at the history of hurricanes real quick after that.
Ian is coming. Ian's here. John, we just felt a marked increase in wind speeds within the last 10 minutes or so. We were riding about 40, 50 miles an hour. It's hard to fathom that speed tripling in the next few hours, but we're now getting maybe 70-mile-an-hour gusts here. We're right at the point where US 43 heads across the Peace River here. I'm just in front of the memorial for Hurricane Charley, which in 2004 devastated this town and sent a wake-up call to this community about the threats of living on the coast in a rapidly warming planet.
There it is.
As a result of that storm, they were the first community in Florida to put in a climate adaptation plan, a sea level coastal resiliency plan that they're, you know, have been working on for years now, and this will be the test. It's hard to build power lines or building codes for 17-foot storm surge, though. That's the crazy variable here right now. No one has ever seen that, so we don't know what that looks like. But this is exactly what climate scientists have been warning about for a long time, and now we get to see it up close, John.
Well, we're going to find out how long they've been warning about that in just a second. Don Lemon tried the same thing. This is where they need to start vetting the guests better. He came at him a couple of times, the overnight sensation Don Lemon.
Can you tell us what this is and what effect the climate change has on this phenomenon?
We can come back and talk about climate change at a later time. I want to focus on the here and now. We think the rapid intensification is probably almost done. There could be a little bit more intensification as it's still over the warm waters of the eastern Gulf of Mexico, but I don't think we're going to get any more rapid intensification. If you look here, you can actually see, pretty interesting for your viewers, you can actually see a second eye wall forming around the inner eye wall, and that's basically the second eye wall has overtaken the original eye wall, and that should arrest development.
I'm just trying to get that. You said you want to talk about climate change, but what effect does climate change have on this phenomenon that is happening now? Because it seems these storms are intensifying. That's the question.
I don't think you can link climate change to any one event.
Okay. No.
On the whole, on the cumulative, climate change may be making storms worse, but to link it to any one event, I would caution against that.
Okay. Well, listen, I grew up there, and these storms are intensifying. Something is causing them to intensify.
Okay. There's Don Lemon. So I just wanted to do a quick little thing through history. This is the first search I looked for. I'll be honest with you. I didn't put a whole lot of time into it. I did a quick search for worst hurricanes ever, and I started looking at the dates here. The idea of the climate change alarmists is that it's not that they're now admitting that climate does change, but they say it's the rate of change now. It's changing so fast now, that's why these storms are getting worse. Top 10 hurricanes or typhoons, it's still on planet Earth. Number 10, Typhoon Amy, 1971. Number 9, Typhoon Ida, 1954. Number 8, Typhoon Rita, 1978. Typhoon Irma comes in at number 7, 1971. Typhoon June comes in at 1975 at number 6. It's the top of the charts for hurricanes. Number 5, Typhoon Tip, 1979. Number 4, Typhoon Joan, 1959. Tied for number 3, Typhoon Ida in 58 and Hurricane Patricia in 2015. Wait a second, isn't that a redo there anyway? Number 2 comes in Typhoon Violet, 1961. And in 1961, topping the charts is Typhoon Nancy. Highest 1 minute sustained winds in this storm, 213 miles an hour. 213 miles an hour, 1961. Huh. That's strange. Let's see. There's still a little bit of COVID stuff out there. Nobody's taking these boosters. I love it. It's like 1.2% of the population is lining up to get these shots, but the CDC keeps trying.
Dr. Paul Offit, an infectious disease and vaccine expert at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, he's also a member of the FDA Advisory Committee, has been critical of this updated booster. He says that a healthy young person really is unlikely to even benefit from a booster dose. It should be targeted more specifically to those who really are most likely to benefit. And I wonder if you agree with that assessment and whether just even saying that adds to what's been, as you know, an ongoing criticism of CDC messaging, that COVID vaccines, COVID itself, the messaging has been confusing.
So first, deep respect to Dr. Offit. Here's what I will say about our updated vaccine. We are simplifying our message. The message is you need to get your fall booster vaccine. So go ahead and get it. If you're over the age of 12, if you've received your primary series, if you're more than 2 months out of your last shot, you can get an updated vaccine. And so we've intentionally simplified the message so it's very, very clear.
Pfizer gave him a call, said, hey, you're confusing the hell out of people. Can we just tell everybody, go get it? I had this for last week. I don't think I got to it. You want the COVID hysterics have got a new tool that will drive them insane. Have you seen this? They've got a mask now. They've got a mask now that can detect coronavirus in just 10 minutes. So this thing will tell you if you're exposed to it at all in the environment around you. Can you even imagine the hystericals that every day, I don't know if this thing buzzes. I think it might go with an app on your phone or something like that. COVID, run away, run away. So they've always got a new tool to scare the crap out of themselves. We come back. Plenty of clips from Biden. He was on fire this past week. The poor man, the drugs aren't working anymore. We'll be right back.
From all over the world, this is Captain America calling. I built you up when you were down on your knees, so will you catch me now? I'm falling.
All right, final segment for the week. We'll finish chronicling the world's descent into madness on This Week on the Crazy Train in a moment. You can't do that without going to the criminally insane man who is bumbling and napping his way through the presidency right now. So we'll get to Joe Biden in a second. But before I do, let me make sure everybody remembers my main recommendation for the week. This is a weekend. It's always pizza time, but the weekend's the time we might be looking to go out, take the kids out, take a date out, take the guys out to check out a game. Make sure you head up to Your Pie in Gluckstadt. They're at 340 Calhoun Station Parkway, right up there by Germantown High School. This is 10 and 14-inch brick oven-fired pizzas, pastas, paninis. They got salad, gelato, beer, and wine, so you can have whatever you want up there. And they make it the way that you want it. The food is absolutely fantastic. The atmosphere is great. This is a locally owned, veteran-owned business, so we definitely want to support those people in our community that are providing jobs and great food to our communities. Make sure that you download the Your Pie app. When you download the app right now and you go in and make a purchase, you scan the little barcode at the bottom of that thing. It's going to send you a certificate for a free pizza pie. So you're going to get a little something just for even going in. And once you try it, you will be back. You'll want that app to continue to accumulate points. So, again, that's Your Pie up in Gluckstadt, 340 Calhoun Station Parkway. Express your inner pizza. If you're more in the mood for sticking around the house and cooking up a steak, let me also remind you about Stonington Farm. It is stoningtonfarm.com. Mississippi-born, raised, and processed meat delivered to you within days of processing. And this is 100% grass-fed from the moment it starts in the fields. They finish with grass as well, and we just did an hour-long interview with Dr. Mike Steinenton and his wife, Katie, where they came in. We talked about the increased nutritional profile of grass-fed beef. It is real. Grass-fed matters, and this is fantastic food. They're trying to open up the Jackson market. Again, this is another locally-owned farm down in Perkiston, Mississippi, that's trying to open up this Jackson market. The food is fantastic. It's nutritionally better than anything you're going to get in the grocery stores, and it is also comparably priced, if not cheaper, than you're going to get in the grocery store for subpar meat. So make sure you check out steiningtonfarm.com. It's singular, steiningtonfarm.com, and make sure that you let them know that Mike Madison and WYAB sent you. All right, let's finish up here. Oh, we had some creepy moments from Creepy Joe this week, didn't he? He was speaking to some woman and just reinforcing the image we all have of Creepy Joe Biden.
But guess what? We got a lot to do. Got to say hi to me. We go back a long way. She was 12, I was 30. But anyway, This woman helped me get an awful lot done. Any rate.
Oh, and the crowd. They just laugh it up. Here he was at a health summit. Remember that he is at a health summit.
Friends, fellow leaders, Bill, thank you for that introduction. And over the... excuse me. Surveillance capabilities. Folks, we have so much.
So he goes, coughing his way through a health summit. That's about right. Here was an interesting one. He tried to, Joe Biden tried to tackle, go after those scary looking assault rifles, those AR-15s, and inadvertently, of course, as his brain is completely scrambled, he stumbled on some truth and actually made the case for why people want AR-15s.
Think about it. What in God's name do you need an assault weapon for? It's an assault weapon designed to kill people, to defend America, to defend people. But folks, look, it's way out of hand.
What would you want an AR-15 for? It's used for to defend people. What? How could you possibly want one of those? And here was his probably biggest gaffe of the week, as he was asking for, I'm forgetting her last name. She's a congresswoman who passed away. See, I have some boundaries. I almost said Congress critter, but she has passed away. So out of respect, I called her a congressperson. This congressperson had passed away. It didn't stop Joe from looking for her.
Here, for including bipartisan elected officials like Representative Governor, Senator Braun, Senator Booker, Representative Jackie, are you here? Where's Jackie? I didn't think she was going to be here to help make this a reality. Thanks to Senator Stabenow, Representative DeLore.
Yeah, where is she? Where is she? Don't worry, Joe. You'll be seeing her real soon. Let's see what else we had. Oh, the vice president didn't disappoint either. Thank goodness we've got the adults in charge of foreign policy here in the United States.
So the United States shares a very important relationship, which is an alliance with the Republic of North Korea. And it is an alliance that is strong and enduring.
Okay, I'll give it to all you people out there that have been saying that Kamala Harris and Democrats are communists. They've got an alliance with North Korea. Oh, let's see. Oh, I don't want to not play this one again. I opened up the entire week this week on this one because this one was so gross. This isn't necessarily crazy. This is aggravating. This is the highlighting the revolving door at a Senate House Financial Services Committee, where they just yuck it up about the revolving door between our government and the big banks.
The gentleman from Indiana, Mr. Hollingsworth, is now recognized for 5 minutes.
Well, good afternoon. I'm excited to be here with each of you. Before I get started on my questions, Mr. Moynihan, I wanted to let you know, Saruthi, raise your hand, Saruthi. She has been my team member for a couple of years now, but on Monday, she becomes a Bank of America team member, about which she is very, very excited. So I hope you'll take good care of her and know and recognize the talent that she has shown already in our office. I'm sure she'll do the same at Bank of America.
We will do that, and her father already works for us, so he'll take care of it.
You should have called us.
Her daddy works there, too. Let's see what else we got. Here's a fun one. And here's a fun one in the United States in 2022. Well, let me just play it.
An unlikely story out of Chicago. A man's SUV was stolen twice in one day. First, it was stolen while getting an oil change. He got it back thanks to GPS. But then just 3 hours later, it was stolen at a gas station while he was filling up.
Gone in 60 seconds or less. The nozzle was in the tank and the gas was flying everywhere. Recontacted the two officers that helped me previously and said, "You're never going to believe this, but my car was stolen again."
But they found it again using GPS.
That was not Jackson, Mississippi. I repeat, that was not Jackson, Mississippi. Of course, it could be worse.
It's the arrest Sherman Oaks business owner Paul Scrivano thought would never happen. 2 days after Fox 11 News shed light on the homelessness crisis affecting Sherman Oaks business owners, LAPD officers arrest this man. Here's why. After openly defecating on Ventura Boulevard, the man then tosses a bag of his bodily waste onto Scrivano's SUV.
So there you go. That should be part of the Jackson, Mississippi Tourism Board. Hey, it could always be worse, I guess. All right, that's it. I've got all the time I've got for today. Going to have a little bit of a hiatus. Support my hosts and the great advertisers here at WYAB, and I will see you next time. Bye-bye.
No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now. No matter how